Corporate Transparency Act, which is basically a pretty heavy regulation on small businesses, including anybody who's created an entity. So it basically affects anyone who has either creates an LLC or some other entity, LLC, LP, corporation, S-Corp, whatever it is. When you file that this year or have filed it in the past, like if you bought a piece of property 10 years ago and you have an LLC, it applies to you as well.
So. Hey there, I am Dr. Jason Ballara, and this is the Know Your Why podcast, where we explore the why behind success. Every week, I meet with real estate investors, veterinary entrepreneurs, mindset coaches, authors, and fitness professionals to uncover their why and how it drives them on the winding road to success. What is your why?
Hi, everyone. I'm Jason Ballara, and this is the Know Your Why podcast. Today, I'm excited to be here with Mauricio Rald. He's known as one of the few lawyers that actually speak English, which when I first read that in the bio, I was like, what is that? Oh, yes, I get it. I get someone someone we can understand. And having seen your content, it's very, very understandable and relatable. Mauricio is the founder and CEO of Premier Law Group and spends 100% of his practice on syndications for real estate investors. So first, Mauricio, thank you so much for coming on the show. I know you're busy. I really appreciate you taking the time out this morning.
No, thanks for having me, man. I'm excited. I've been watching your stuff, especially on LinkedIn. It keeps popping up, and I'm like, hey, I need to get on Jason's podcast one of these days. So really pumped to be here.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, tell us just a little bit more about yourself and your background, and then I'll probably just start firing off questions.
Yeah, most people know me as a syndication attorney, so we basically help real estate syndicators stay out of jail. First I was born in Chile, actually, but moved here when I was pretty young, went to school up in the San Francisco Bay Area at Berkeley, went to law school, and then really landed a dream job. I worked at a big law firm that was an amazing law firm, and we did a lot of securities work there, but I did a lot of litigation. So I did a lot of trial work, a lot of depositions, a lot of, you know, arbitrations, mediations, all that kind of stuff. Knew that's not what I wanted to do long term. And I was fortunate enough, I don't know if I have back here, but I ran across the little purple book many, many years ago, right when it came out, the Rich Dad, Poor Dad, which I'm sure you've read and I'm sure most of your listeners have. And that really kind of changed my whole, not only really changed my perspective, but really confirmed my perspective, because I just knew there was something more. I was just kind of doing the grind. I was in the rat race, right? I was just kind of going to work and just going through the motions. And I'm like, do I really need to do this until I'm 65 years old? I mean, something, there's got to be something more to this. And that's what that book really confirmed for me, which was amazing. And what was even more amazing is that book led me to meet a bunch of people who had been really influential in my life. So the first group of people I met was the real estate guys. So Robert and the real estate guys have really established a really nice relationship. Robert Helms, Russell Gray, went to work as their general counsel. So I was their in-house attorney for many, many years. And that's really where I cut my teeth on syndications. And also where I did a lot of asset protection. So I'm also pretty well known as an entity formation, asset protection, you know, privacy guy. I don't do that anymore. I kind of think of myself as a recovering or a retired, but I know a lot about it. In fact, I wrote a book that was primarily on that topic. I love talking about that, by the way, just parenthetically, because I don't have anything to sell when it comes to asset protection. A lot of people are like, oh, they're in the trust business, and so they want to sell you a trust, or they have a series LLCs, and so they want whatever it is that they're pitching is usually what they focus on. And I'm like, I'm just here to tell you what the pros and cons are of all of those things. But anyway, went to work for the real estate guys. And it's really funny because that was almost 20 years ago. As you can tell, I got the gray hairs. And back then, it was interesting because this was before social media, before webinars. And we literally did pitch events or, you know, presentations live, in person, in a room, you know, 60, 80 people. I'm there with PPMs printed out, right? Old school. Robert's up there with a presentation. I think he just switched to PowerPoint. He was doing acetate. Remember the acetate stuff before PowerPoint? And so he would literally do the pitch. And then the investors would literally review PPMs. I was there to answer questions. And then they would literally sign the documents, you know, real live document, no DocuSign, no fax it over, just literally sign it. And then they would write a check, a physical check, for the investment amount, and we would take that. So that was kind of a funny thing, because obviously now it's evolved, as you know, to doing everything online and webinars and social media. But anyway, after a little bit of that, I started helping some of their community out, doing a lot of actually entity formations, LLCs, and then helping them a little bit that way. And that kind of evolved into my own little side hustle or side business, where I was helping them, those guys with stuff, because a lot of them were kind of paying ridiculous amounts of money to set up an entities or an LLC. It's like, I made the analogy back then. It's like, you got Michael Jordan teaching you how to shoot free throws or something. It's like, you don't need Michael Jordan. You don't need to go spend $3,000-$4,000 set up an LLC. You're just setting up a really simple thing. So started helping them out. And that really grew into what is now Premier Law Group, which, you know, I left the guys, started my own firm, obviously kept them as a VIP client. And at the beginning, dude, you know, when you start, when you're an entrepreneur, you just do whatever puts food on the table. So I was doing asset protection. I was doing syndication. I was doing contract review, like anything you needed, man, I'm in. Give me a check and I'll do it. Yeah. And then over time, you know, as the practice grew, I whittled it down to just syndications and asset protection, entity formations. And then about 7 or 8 years ago, just completely went all in on syndication because it was, you know, it's starting to be a big part of the business. And I just really literally caught that boom. I mean, from 2017, I think is when I really switched over, 17, 18, to today. I mean, it's been a good 8, 9 years where it's really been a syndication boom, you know, up until maybe, you know, about 18 months ago, almost 2 years ago, where it kind of started to flatten out a bit and maybe come down. But anyway, so that's how I got here. I now run a law firm, Premier Law Group, where, as you mentioned, 100% of our practice is real estate syndication, and the vast majority are really Reg D exemptions and mostly multifamily, you know, some self-storage, mobile home parks, things like that. But that's all we do, man. We don't help raise capital for, you know, marijuana dispensaries or crypto or anything. It's purely real estate. We've got that dialed in. And like my good buddy said, Tom Wheelwright, who again, also met him through Robert Kiyosaki, who, by the way, I met my wife through Tom Wheelwright's influence. It's like, it's a really a nice chain of events. Yeah. Tom coined that phrase for me. He said that I was one of the few attorneys that actually spoke English, along with my other good buddy, Garrett Sutton, who's the other rich dad advisor. So both of us have this ability to take kind of complex, you know, boring, esoteric securities matters or even asset protection matters and just kind of distill it and make it easy to understand for folks. And so, as you can tell, I'm not your usual lawyer. I've got a little bit more personality than most. And so I got a little bit of energy behind this, and hopefully that translates into people really capturing the information, because there's one thing to deliver the information, but if you don't receive it, it really isn't worth much. It's really, one of my coaches, Dan Martell, likes to say, it's not what's taught, it's what's caught. So it's really important to just kind of be able to communicate that properly to the other side.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny because, I mean, we have like mutual connections in the space. I know you do the Drunk Real Estate podcast with Jay Scott. He's one of my mentors. I'm in their apartment addicts program. I mean, so there's,
oh, great.
And,
awesome.
And Bethany was on my podcast, I don't remember, maybe about 6 months ago. So
yeah, I mean, like, my partner, yeah.
We know people. And I think because of that, I happened to come across your content. And like, and that's why I'm like so excited to talk to you today. Cause people who don't follow you should, because it's just like some of this stuff, the way that you present it is really in such a relatable, digestible manner, where a lot of legal stuff, just, it's hard to understand. It gets almost complicated for the sake of being complicated. Again, not an attorney, but from a perspective, that's a lot what it looks like when you're trying to, you know, sort of understand things. So I appreciate what you do put out there. I definitely want to talk about your book, but one of the topics that has been, you know, sort of commonly spoken about in your content is related to the Corporate Transparency Act. And I wanted to maybe see if you could just talk a bit about that here and, you know, sort of clarify maybe some of the high level points that you think are important.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely affects us. And so we've kind of been caught in this web, and I'm still trying to figure out how to get out of this web because it's not one I want to be in. But yeah, unfortunately, the Corporate Transparency Act, which is basically a pretty heavy regulation on small businesses, including anybody who's created an entity. So it basically affects anyone who has either creates an LLC or some other entity, LLC, LP, corporation, S-Corp, whatever it is. When you file that this year, or have filed it in the past, like if you bought a piece of property 10 years ago and you have an LLC, it applies to you as well. So if you've ever set up an LLC or some entity, this applies to you. And if you're not aware of it and you don't follow it, there's some pretty hefty penalties that go along with it. So at the very least, if this is the first time you've heard of the Corporate Transparency Act, hopefully I'll give you some info, but Google it, Corporate Transparency Act, make sure you're following it. But essentially it requires, the government is trying, you know, according to them, they're trying to avoid all these sort of nefarious activities, tax evasion, money laundering, you know, secrecy stuff. And so they just want to know who everybody is. Is basically what they want. They want to figure out when you create an entity. They don't want you to have the ability to hide your identity. They don't want to be able to, for you to be able to put an entity above an entity, an offshore, like whatever it is that you're trying to do to to sort of hide or make it difficult for somebody to figure out. The government wants to know who you are. And so the way they've done that is basically told you, look, anytime you set up an LLC, I want to know, meaning the government wants to know your name. They want to know your home address, not a PO box, they want to know where you live. They want your date of birth. They want some kind of an identifier number, like a driver's license or a passport. And then they want a copy of that passport or driver's license, which you basically upload. And so this is all happening through one of the governmental agencies called FinCEN, which is the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network. And they deal with a lot of sort of, again, financial crimes, wire money in and out. They're kind of overseeing everything anyway. And so there's a website. You go up there and you start uploading, you know, within 90 days. So if you've set up an entity this year, so as of January 1st of 2024, when this became in effect, you have 90 days to provide this information to the government. And of course, we're already, as we're at the time of this recording, it's actually the first week of April, which means that if you did create an entity right at the beginning of the year, your 90 days is up or it's coming up. So you want to make sure that it applies to you. So the question then becomes, well, who actually does have to fill out this information? Is it everybody? If I own 1% of the LLC, if I'm a limited partner in a syndication, do I need to fill this out? And the answer is not necessarily. The people who have to fill it out are what are called beneficial owners. That's kind of the terminology they use. And a beneficial owner is either anyone who has 25% or more ownership. So obviously, if it's just you or you and your spouse or you and a couple partners, you're going to own more than 25%. So if you own 25%, you've got to report. And if you have substantial control over the entity, then you also have to report, because they want to catch everybody. It doesn't matter whether you actually own the company. A lot of people have like side agreements. Oh, it's like a profit share, or maybe they want to control the entity behind the scenes and not be on the official records, but they're pulling the strings. If you're pulling the strings, if you're the manager, obviously, of the LLC, or the manager of the manager, or you're, you know, a majority owner of all the voting shares, or you've got a contract with the company where it says, hey, if at any time I can step in and take over the company, whatever substantial control you have, you also have to provide that information. And so it's a pretty onerous thing, because you've got to report, you know, not only your information, you've got to report the information of the LLC itself. And then what sucks for me is that the people who file the LLC, which for our clients, when we do syndication deals, we file the syndication LLCs, and we sometimes create entities for people. We also, as the filer, have to report. So I have to provide my personal information because I'm a filer, and I'm also on the hook if we don't get the information on time, right? If you give me false information or you don't give me the information and my 90 days is up, I'm in trouble. So what we've been doing lately, and I think most of them are doing this, is like we're not going to file anything until we have all that information from you. I can't take the risk that you tell me the information, great, I file it, and then I'm like, okay, give me your driver's license, give me your address, and you're like, well, I can't find you, or right. Hey, I'm not going to give you my personal address, or you know, whatever. So it's been a big shift. There's already been a lot of legal challenges, as you can imagine. A lot of people are arguing that it oversteps, kind of overreach from the government, right? Violations of constitutions, and there was a court not too long ago. I think literally about a month ago, on March 1st, a federal judge, a district court in Alabama. There was a case that was filed by the National Small Business Association, which has about 60,000 members, basically challenging this on a bunch of different grounds. And the judge actually did side with them and found that this law was unconstitutional because Congress didn't have the power to even come up with this law, let alone, you know, address any of the constitutional issues. So a lot of people got excited about that because they thought, oh, I don't have to worry about it, which is not true. It only applies, it's a very limited application, only applies to all of the members in the National Small Business Association. So you had to be a member of that organization before March 1st for you to be covered. And it's going to get appealed. And so what's going to happen is it's going to get appealed to the circuit court there in Alabama, which is actually pretty conservative. So there's a good chance they will uphold it, but it's just going to get continued to be appealed all the way up. And unless you are in Alabama, for example, if you live in Alabama and the Alabama sort of higher court it says it's unconstitutional, then maybe you have an argument that if you live in Alabama, the court's argued. But I live in California. Like if I file a lawsuit, that case is relevant, but it's certainly not binding on the courts here in California. And so they may agree with them, may not agree with them. But, you know, government's going to continue to enforce it. They're expecting everybody to continue to file it. And until this gets appealed and goes I think it's going to go all the way to the Supreme Court. When the Supreme Court says, hey, it's unconstitutional, then you can stop filing. Or if the government says, hey, while this is going on, I'm going to stop. But until now, they're continuing. They're not going to stop. And you've got 90 days if you filed it this year. For prior years, the good news is if you've got entities that you created before January 1st, 2024, you have until the end of the year, right? So you do have until the end of the year, because I've got clients, Jason, who literally have over 100 entities, syndicators and, yeah. and people who are vertically integrated, and they got a bunch of properties. So can you imagine you've got to go through 100 filings to do that? So it's time consuming. It's obviously a pain. There's a cost, the time, money, energy, but you do have until the end of the year to file it if you filed it before this year. But if you filed it in 2024, you've got 90 days to file it. And then if anything changes, by the way, if new members come in that now trigger, you know, somebody may not have been a 25% owner, but now they are because one of the members left, or maybe there's a change in the management or change in the ownership that changes the control, then you have 30 days to go and amend that that filing. And the penalties are severe. It's like $500 a day per violation. And there's even criminal, you know, if you do it intentionally, they can fine you up to $10,000 and it's 2 years in prison. And that's if it's just a regular criminal. There's this provision in there, which I'm not sure exactly what it covers, but like if you're literally nefarious and doing some stuff, they can get you up to 5 years in jail. So it's pretty onerous, man.
Yeah. I saw the penalties. I was like, that's a lot. Even for someone just, you know, if you just forget or you don't know or something like that, and they come and find out, it always brings up a question that I've thought about in the past. And this will tie into, I think, a lot about your book and the asset protection layers and things like that. We with our syndications, we do a, you know, we register in a protected state, I guess, if you will, and then we have a registered agent. So there's this, you know, mailing address mm-hmm. that's nobody's mailing address except yeah. for that registered agent. So we do all these steps, and I think, like, my understanding is that's what most people do in the syndication world, something similar to that. In California, there's different, I know it doesn't always apply to our syndication, but there are different rules about, like, if you tried to, like, for example, my surgery business, it was filed in Delaware, but I still have to file with California state because I do it in California. So that, like, doing it in Delaware then didn't really help me in a lot of ways. My question to you, though, is with this Corporate Transparency Act, and even with the fact that, like, everybody's on social media and things like that, we go through all these layers of protection, but my feeling is it's actually pretty easy to find who someone is, right? If someone really wants to, I'm really interested, maybe your book goes into this too, but I'm really interested kind of what your take on that is. Cause that's something a question I've had before. And I'm like, why do we have a registered agent? Like, I have to put my address on all of this stuff. Like, people talk about what they're doing in syndication on social media. Like, it's not hard to find who we all are.
Yeah.
What do you think? Like, I understand, like, I want protection. I'm just, it's hard to, you know, sort of, especially now with this Corporate Transparency Act, it's hard to say, like, are we actually protected? What is your...
Yeah, I do talk about that quite a bit. I do talk about layers of protection. I talk a lot about privacy as well, because I'm a big privacy guy too. So there's a lot, let's talk about, because there's a couple of layers there to unpack. So let's just kind of separate a little bit. So as it pertains to the Corporate Transparency Act, in theory, anyway, according to the statute, according to the law itself, this is not public information. This is limited to government agencies. So it goes to the FinCEN, which is the Financial Networks Crime Enforcement Network. It'll go to the FBI. It'll go to the IRS. It'll go to the local enforcement organizations. But it's not something that a plaintiff's attorney or any private citizen can just go, you know, just find that information. Maybe the best way to analogize it maybe is sort of tax returns, right? So tax returns. Mm-hmm. Again, not impossible to get. You know, you've seen scenarios where they did, but it's not super easy for me to just be like, hey, give me your tax returns. Let me go to the IRS and give them a subpoena and I just get your tax information. It's very, very difficult. Usually it's got to be a specific case and it's got to be super relevant to, obviously, if you're accused of tax fraud or something, you know, so things like that. So theoretically, anyway, this is limited to the government, which is always, by the way, all of these asset protection strategies are always meant for private citizens. I mean, if you're engaging in some kind of tax evasion or something that the government now tries to come after you, I don't care what. That's one of the holes of every single asset protection statute. The government has unlimited resources, and I don't care if you have an offshore trust in the Cook Islands. There's a way for them to get to you, right? But so we're talking about, usually when we talk about privacy, we're talking about third parties, right? You're a syndicator, you're a real estate investor, you're an entrepreneur, you're out there doing dangerous things. You want to make sure that you're protected. And one of the nice things one of the ways to be protected, not in and of itself, but privacy is a big deal, right? So now let's talk about the privacy thing. So forget about the Corporate Transparency Act, because we've got to assume that's not going to get leaked out to the public. But to your point about social media and public records, first of all, there is a way, which is where the privacy comes in, to create your entities so that nobody really can find out who you are based on the searches of the entities, right? So there are a lot of states, like the state of Wyoming, for example, which is one of the reasons, in addition to all the other benefits of Wyoming, which other states have as well. What's beautiful about Wyoming is that even the state of Wyoming doesn't know who you are, because they don't ask for the information of who the owner is or who the manager is when you file your entities in Wyoming. And then when you renew your thing every year, which you're required to do, they don't ask you for who the managers or who the members are. So even the state of Wyoming doesn't know who you are, which is a great thing. So if somebody's searching you on, you know, because Wyoming, you can search on the website. If they search for you over there, they're not going to find you. And so a real simple strategy, give you a little bit of some actionable items here, is if you create an entity, let's just say you're in Texas, which is, by the way, is an amazing state. But let's just say you want some privacy. Well, Texas, like many states, does require you to put either the owner or the manager, or the member or the manager has to go on the filing. Well, you would never put a member on. There's no reason you would ever put who the owners are of an entity. So you'd have to just put whoever the manager is. And if instead of putting your own name, obviously, if you put Jason, you know, as the manager, I'm going to know who you are. If you put Lark Capital or any of your other entities that is tied to you and you're all over the internet, of course. But if you create an entity, a management company in Wyoming, and then list that Wyoming company as the manager in that Texas LLC, there is no connection to you for that particular entity. So from a filing perspective, that's kind of how we create that anonymity, because we generally don't have to disclose the owners. And when we disclose the managers, we can just disclose either a manager in a state that they can't figure out the information, or there's something called nominee services where you literally hire somebody like myself. I don't do it, but theoretically, you hire Mauricio to actually do the filing for you. I'm listed on the documents as the manager. And then as soon as that gets filed, I resign, you come back in, and now you're in control. But again, on the filing itself, you're nowhere to be found. Obviously, you shouldn't name yourself as a registered agent, because that's definitely gonna be public. Definitely, I would never, ever, 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 ever name myself as a registered agent, not only for the privacy issues, but you also don't want people serving you with legal papers, hiding behind your bushes in your home, bouncing out when, you know, you've got people at your home or you're coming back from a date, right? Then it comes back to your last layer, which is, well, but you know, I'm on social media, everybody. Yes. So you've got to think about entity protection as two separate categories of stuff. One is your operating companies, Premier Law Group, Lark Capital, whatever your syndication business is. Those are your public facing entities, and everybody knows who you are, and no problem. So I'll give you an example. I'm going to pick on your company, Jason, give you some specific guidance for you, but it'll also give you a good example. So Lark Capital, everybody knows, should know, it's not that hard to find that you're connected to Lark Capital, right? And so Lark Capital is going to be the manager, presumably, of your syndications, or it might be managing other entities, but it really shouldn't own anything. So when it comes to operational companies, we don't want operational companies to own assets, because they are, not only are they not private, but they're also the most exposed. I mean, that's the company that does all the business, and there's a good chance that Lark Capital one day will get sued, just like Premier Law Group one day may get sued. And so those companies are going to get sued one day if you just look at the statistics. So they don't own anything, and everybody knows who you are. But the valuable assets, right, your carried interest in your syndications, or your ownership in real estate, or, you know, all those other things, those are held outside of those public-facing companies, right? So that's where we create like a holding. You hear the term a holding company. That's what those are for. Holding companies are the private companies that do nothing else other than hold title to an asset. Now, not directly. It's usually through an LLC, right? So your holding company owns LLC in a property. And so that's the private part that nobody needs to know. Nobody needs to know that you own 75 rental properties. You know, nobody needs to know that. Now they'll find your home. They're going to know your home, because it's difficult. You don't really recommend putting homes. And, you know, everybody knows where you live. It's not that hard to figure out where you live. They can follow you. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows your business. Everybody's gonna look at your bank account and your personal name. That's easy to find. But if you've got like $1 million sitting around, or a lot of money sitting around that you're waiting to deploy, that should not be in your personal bank account, right? With your name on it, right? Or even in a large cap, it should be in a separate entity that's private that nobody needs to know about. And so understanding that there are some things that are public, like your website, like your company, like your management company, like your businesses. And then that's the operational part. And that's where all the liability is, by the way. So make sure those companies don't own anything. And then your valuable assets are held in a different place that nobody really should know about. At least until there's a lawsuit. Like once there's a lawsuit and there's a judgment against you, which is another very important piece. When there's a judgment against, not when there's a lawsuit, but when there's a judgment against you, and now, hey, Jason, you owe me a bunch of money. Now I can bring you in and say, okay, dude, what do you own? Where are your entities? You know, what do you, fine. But until that happens, before there's a judgment, if I just sue you, I don't have the right to bring you in and say, hey, what do you own, Jason? Because it's completely irrelevant to the lawsuit. The lawsuit's all about liability, not about your ability to pay the judgment.
Okay. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I assumed that I get that there are obviously like reasons and things, but I think sort of breaking it out into the operating companies and stuff makes it clear as to, you know, kind of why that's effective.
One of the things I enjoyed about, and it's very, look, I'm not a, everybody, I always joke, cause I do a lot of entity structuring for on my content, and I'm not a graphic designer by any means, but in the book, I put little diagrams. When you're let's assume most of your listeners are real estate investors. I think of it three different types of entities or that you do when you're structuring. One is the, what I would call a property LLC. That's the LLC that actually holds title to the property, right? That's going to be in whatever state the property is. If you have a property in Houston, you're going to create a Texas LLC, and that Texas LLC will be the owner of that property, right? Then there's the management companies, right? The operational companies, in your case, would be kind of a large capital type of company that everybody knows it's you. That would be the manager of that property LLC, right? And again, everybody, that's the company that makes all the decisions, that's all the liabilities. Everybody knows who it is, and it shouldn't own a thing. It just manages the entities, gets paid a fee for managing. You know, in its syndication world, you get an acquisition fee, asset management fee, disposition fees, refinance, whatever the fees are, right? Right. And then the third type of entity is the holding company. The holding company is, that's the one that you want to set up in a really good asset protection state, the ones that you've heard of, Wyoming, Nevada, Delaware. And as of September of last year, I will add Texas to that list because Texas came out with some new laws and now I think put it at the same level as those other three. That's the one that has to be in one of those states. And that's the one that I would make as private as possible. So even if I use that a Texas example, this is one of the reasons I like Wyoming anyway. But if I did do a Texas, I would then have a Wyoming management company, so I didn't have to disclose who the, you know, there's no tie to me. I just don't want anybody knowing that I'm the owner of those things.
Got it. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and just another thing. I know, Jason, I'm bouncing around, but I think it's interesting. Mm-hmm. So I actually spent a few minutes working at a really well-known plaintiffs lawyer, his office up in the Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area, a very well-known attorney up there. And I can tell you from experience, the first thing that a plaintiff's lawyer does before he or she files a lawsuit is they do an asset search. Because most plaintiff's lawyers, especially on personal injury cases or slip and falls, or, you know, which a lot of landlords will face, they work on what's called a contingency fee basis, meaning they only get paid if they recover money for their clients, right? So it doesn't matter how amazing the case is for them, if they can't be convinced that after spending time getting a judgment against you, they can actually go collect on the judgment, they're not going to spend any time on it. Like, they could be the greatest case of all time, but if they do an asset search, which is the first thing they're going to do, they're going to do a easy thing to do is do a real estate sweep. It's really, everything's publicly on the county recorder's office. You can easily, there's databases. I can search your name to see if you own any property. Bank accounts, brokerage accounts, super easy to sweep. So I can do a search and see, hey, what bank accounts do you have and how much money is in your bank account? So that's the first thing we're going to do. And if I then see, oh, he owns this house or this, look at his home, it's worth a couple $1 million. He's got no debt on it. Boom, there's $2 million there. He's got a bank account with a bunch of money. Then it's like, let's go. But if they do an asset search and they can't find anything, yes, they find your house, but it's got a mortgage on it, so it's not really much there. And yes, I found a bank account, but it's got like $5,000 in it. And yeah, I found all these things, but I don't see anything else. They're more likely to settle for whatever insurance you have. So insurance is always your first line of defense. Whatever insurance policy you have, you got $1 million or five, whatever that is, boom, let's go settle for that insurance policy. I don't want to think about it. You don't want to spend the next 2 or 3 years of your life fighting to get a judgment on behalf of your client, get the judgment, and then look around and there's nothing to collect. It's just not worth the risk for a plaintiff's lawyer. So they always do an asset search. So that's really where privacy kicks in, is when they do that search, make sure they don't see anything at first glance, and that'll dissuade them more than anything to go after you.
Yeah, no, that's very good to know. Your book is all about asset protection. And are you, tell us a little bit about, like, I know we just talked about some of it, but is it specific to real estate syndication, or is it more of an overall asset protection?
Yeah, so this is a book called Legal Strategies for Everyone, and it's really meant as sort of an introductory level book. And this was it's with Ken McElroy, who's one of the Rich Dad advisors, and it's through his publishing company. And he asked me to write the book sort of as a high level. And it's not just asset protection. I mean, it's probably I've got probably half of that is on asset protection or privacy or sort of asset protection trust kind of advanced stuff. But we talk about estate planning in here. We talk about, strategies to work with attorneys. We talk about, how to hold your house. There's a lot of other strategies, your digital assets people forget about, social media. When you pass away, what's going to happen with your Facebook accounts and all those pictures that you have on your Facebook account. So it's meant to do anything. But I do focus a lot on asset protection because it's a way, obviously, to protect your wealth. I mean, we talk about, know your why, obviously, here on the podcast. It's like, great, you're doing what you're doing. You're accumulating your wealth. You've got these dreams and goals for you and your family. You want to make sure you protect it, right? It's your money. You don't want to go through life and then halfway through it, have some thing happen, some catastrophic thing happen or an accident, and it just causes you to go back to step one because you had to give up all your assets. So protecting your wealth, whether it's through entity structuring, whether it's through insurance, we've got a couple chapters on insurance, whether it's estate planning, one of the chapters that I write in there is about, not letting the government tell you what to do when it comes to your kids. Because if you don't have an estate plan, you don't have a will or a living trust, then it's going to be some governmental agency that's going to determine who's going to be the custodian of your kids, right? So if you've got kids, please, please, please make sure you have a will. Only 40% of people actually have a written will. And so if you pass without a will and you pass intestate, there's a risk that some judge in some custody court will have custody of your kids to somebody maybe you didn't want them to have. So having a will, having an estate plan is really important. And most people don't realize this, but even if you don't have a will, you do have a will because of a default will, which is in the state statute. So whatever state you live in, if you go to that state statute, there's going to be a distribution order where if you die without a will, which is called you die intestate, then the judge is just going to look through as well. All of your money is going to go here, 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 here. And that may or may not be what you wanted. So super important to spend a couple dollars on the front end, avoid probate, all that good stuff. But it's all about just protecting your wealth, right? And making sure that you've got your affairs in order. And so I spend a lot of time on asset protection, estate planning, but I also talk about insurance, privacy, and a bunch of other things in the book.
Well, I'm going to have to get that book. Mauricio, I know time is somewhat limited, and I want to ask you the questions I ask every guest for sure. Always welcome to be back on the show at some point too. But the first one is related to the name of the show being Know Your Why, and so I like to ask every guest, what is your why? I've seen, like I said, you put out a lot of content, and I know you mentioned you having a coach. I think that there's a lot to be said for like people that have coaches are driven. You post, a lot of times. I know you're also someone who gets up early in the morning. There's a lot of there's just something about that I think often it all ties together. But I guess I'll leave it at what is your why. But I'm always interested in sort of the mindset behind this, the success.
Yeah, I love mindset. I am an early riser. I'm part of the four. I always joke I'm part of the 4 a.m. club. Sometimes I dabble in the 3 a.m. club, but I always people tell me, hey, like I'm part of the 5 a.m. club. I get up at 5, and I always say that you get up at 5 a.m. That must be nice to sleep in till 5 a.m. every day. Yeah. but it's just natural. I just get up. It's just a habit I've developed. Now, I wake up even if I don't want to. I'm going to be waking up somewhere around 4, 4:30. But I'm a big family. I've got my amazing wife Heidi and my two little girls. They're 10 and they're going to be 10 and 8. And that's really my why, right? I do everything to make sure that we're doing getting our goals and dreams for our family. And alongside that, the way I'm very goal oriented, right? I've got I'm very vision driven. I'm very goal oriented. And for me, one of the things that is sort of a subsection of that why is I look at what I want, right? Family, whatever it is, and everybody's different, right? Jim Rohn has a great quote on what success is, and success is literally the unfolding of you design your life, you unfold that and just pull that off, right? And so it's the unfolding of the design of your own life and pulling it off. And so I always just look at here, where do I want to be in 5 years or 10 years? What are my goals? And then who do I need to become in order to be that person to get those goals, right? If I want to be the best father in the world, because, and I thought of that, by the way, there's somebody in the world right now who, according to your statistics and your values, is the number one dad in the world. Well, and again, you define the greatest dad differently than probably I do. We all have a different definition. But there's somebody out there in the world that is number one, who's in the top 1%. And so I'm like, who is that person that I, who is that father I want to be? Who is that spouse, husband I want to be? Who's the business owner I want to be? Who's the community leader? Who's the blah, blah, blah. And then you have to ask yourself, well, who do I need to become in order to have that? Like, what books do I need to read? What coaches do I need to get? You know, what seminars do I need to go to? What people do I need to meet? What relationships do I get into in order for me to get to that point? And that's something that drives me a lot. Just getting better and better every day and getting to that version of myself that I have in my mind, which is like my 10.0 version of myself. I'll never get there, but it's my driving force. Is like, and again, it's not just financial. Yes, there's a financial component to that. I mean, I'm working toward growing an 8-figure business. So I'm asking myself, okay, who do I need to become to be an 8-figure CEO? Like, you know, what skills do I need to develop, right? What books do I need to read? What do I need? What mindset do I have to have? What coaches do I need to get me there? And, but it's not just money. It's, I mean, I'm a big family guy. So your family life, your parents, relationship with your parents, your kids, your wife. So that really drives me a lot. And it's a lot of fun. It just, it makes me feel good when you're making progress towards a worthy goal. And that drives me a lot.
Awesome. Awesome. Tell us something about yourself that isn't common knowledge. Special skill, hobby, something that let listeners know you a little bit better.
I used to say I get up at ridiculous hours, but I think I post enough about that that people know me about that. I've lived in 4 different countries. I was born in Chile, lived in England for about 10 years, lived in Belize for a couple years on an island, and lived obviously here in the United States. And I married a Miss Illinois. My wife used to be in the whole beauty pageant thing, so it's which now has its drawbacks, and I'm stuck watching all of the beauty pageants out there. But but it's been fun. She's an amazing mom, and that was another thing. For example, when I was single, that's, you know, I was like, you know, who do I need to become to attract the type of wife that I wanted? And I always knew that I was really looking for the mother of my children when I was single. That was kind of the mentality that I had, and so and I met her at a wedding in the Cook Islands. So. Go figure.
It's a really, so many people, you forget the power of sort of reverse engineering your life, and whether that's the financial relationships, whatever. It's like, this is what I want, now back up, and what do I need to do to make that happen? And I think we often, I mean, I still do sometimes, you're in that sort of reactive mode where it's like, oh, I'm just trying to get through whatever that day brings. But really, if you kind of look from it from a coming reverse engineering, coming backwards, that you can have a better chance of achieving what you're trying to achieve. When people hear this and they want to reach out, what's the best way? I know we talked about, you know, can kind of find you on all the social medias, and we'll put in the show notes, but what's your preferred method of communication?
Yeah, if you're interested in the book, I've got a website, legalstrategiesforeveryone.com. You can actually probably get a hold of me there as well. But I'm all over social media, so it's not that hard to find me. LinkedIn is probably where I spend most of my time. So if you're not there with me on LinkedIn, you can always DM me there. And then I just discovered, I know I'm going to sound like an ancient guy, I discovered this new social media platform last year called Instagram. And for some reason, you know, I had an account but didn't do much. I'm pretty active on Instagram as well. It's just at Mauricio Raold. But honestly, I love LinkedIn. I like giving my thoughts there. I post probably 2 or 3 times every day on LinkedIn. Super easy to find me. Just DM me, and love to get in touch with you.
Awesome. Awesome. Final question for you, Mauricio. I always ask every guest, what advice would you give to someone who is looking to get started? And you've got a unique perspective. You can kind of take this from whatever angle you want, but, you know, get started, whether that's in syndication or with their asset protection or, you know, in anything really. Just what are your steps for towards success in the beginning?
Yeah, I mean, I think as you can tell, and I know you're the same way, I'm really big on personal development. And so I would advise somebody to spend a lot of time on personal development, meaning working on yourself, right? Yes, you want to, if you're just starting out, you probably have a job, maybe a W-2 job, great. But spend time working on yourself, trying to develop better skills, better habits, read as many books as you can, just absorb as much information. I started relatively easy, I think, on the personal development role. When I met the Realistic guys, they really introduced me to folks like Jim Rohn and Darren Hardy and Zig Ziglar and all these guys. But I wish I'd started a little bit earlier. I probably started at 25, 30. But that's made a huge difference in my life. It's allowed me to develop certain habits that I think have contributed to my success. And a lot of it is mindset and just focusing on that. So I would really encourage people to work on their personal development. I do believe that you will never rise above the level of your personal development. So if you don't have the skills, if you don't have that personal development, you're just not going to get where you need to get. So invest in yourself, read the books, get the coaches, get the mentors, work on, Jim Rohn used to say, work harder on yourself than you do on your job. And then that'll be the first step anyway.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. Well, listen, thank you so much for your time today. Appreciate it very much. Been a pleasure having you on the show. Thank you.
No, thanks for having me. I've been looking forward to this for a long time, so I'm glad it finally happened.
Yeah, me too. Folks listening, I know you're going to get a ton of value out of this episode. Please rate, and review the show so we can get more great guests like Mauricio. And thank you all for listening.
Hey there, I am Dr. Jason Ballara, and this is the Know Your Why podcast, where we explore the why behind success. Every week, I meet with real estate investors, veterinary entrepreneurs, mindset coaches, authors, and fitness professionals to uncover their why and how it drives them on the winding road to success. What is your why?